question memos for new apartments and parking attached. It's number 6 is relevant to this. As a senior citizen who may be downsizing, I see broader issues related, such as immediate impacts on classroom sizes, inner southeast neighborhoods' lack of parks, public parks, a need for a safe crosswalks for pedestrians, young and old. We must address tenants' needs for reserved on-street parking for TriMet lift bus services, postal deliveries, Meals on Wheels, drop-off for children for music lessons, scouting programs, FedEx monthly medications, grocery deliveries, etc., in hopefully multi-generational condos. I, for one, do not want to live in assisted living. I'm not grown old. I'm going to fight every day of it. I remain hopeful developers first review Kurt Schultz Sierra Architects blueprints for 77 condos going in on Southeast 26th and Hawthorne. He called the style streetcar apartments based on the apartments built in the early part of the century along the old trolley lines. We have one on Belmont, the number 15, Mount Tabor. Did I fail to mention that this developer first met with the neighbors to review the footprint, reported the number of on-site parking spaces in addition to a space for an on-site lockable bike storage, workshop for bike repairs, as well as activity rooms to schedule after-school activities? As for the next step returning facing us, this no parking issue will be reviewed by the Planning and Sustainability Commissioners. Trust me, I'll be in attendance. Then late spring, it flips back to City Council for review prior to be put into the comp plan. Prior to voting, I trust the new City Council will continue to ask who really benefits, the investor or the tenants. I am requesting broader consideration where and how exemptions to minimum parking requirements are applied and remain hopeful that BADS planning staff be out front on these issues for tenants that choose not to own a car. That's my testimony. I've been in Selwood resident. This is almost comical when somebody close to the bridge says, oh, we have mass transit a good mile away. Somebody is not doing their job. Somebody is saying, hey, I don't want to tip the boat. I don't know who the developers are. There's a lot of time we've had bumpy roads in City Council here with new faces here and the guys I trust, and I certainly am pleased with Amanda Fritz that I'm positive we are going to move forward. Thank you.
Thanks very much.
Yeah. Hi, Doug Klotz. I co-founded the Willamette Pedestrian Coalition 20 years ago. It's now America Walks. I've been on the city's Pedestrian Advisory Committee that time also. And I am in agreement with the letters that you've received from those two groups, from the Portland Neighbors for Sustainable Development and from the AIA ASLA group. Yesterday we learned that 2012 was the warmest year on record in the United States, and I think most Portlanders realize that the planet is warming and human actions are the cause, just to set the stage here. Building a compact city with higher density corridors and centers where activity is concentrated is known to reduce energy use and carbon emissions, and economic forces have now aligned to produce a bloom of apartments in these corridors. We need these apartments along transit streets. We need them to meet state and local regulations, the transportation planning rule, climate action plan. We need high density and transit streets to reduce auto travel and to save everybody money, save the city money, the residents, and TriMet. You get more people there to use the bus, you get more people there to shop at the buildings, and you get lower rents. Right now, in this economy, which is not a good economy, with these regulations, banks are lending and developers are building. Because they don't have to build parking, these buildings pencil out, so they're getting built. And folks living in these buildings drive less than the nearby homeowners. They commute in a single vehicle. Only 36% of them do that versus 53% for the inner city neighborhoods or 57% citywide. So even with the parking or not, these buildings are having an effect on lowering auto use and in the inner city, which is where most of them are being built. At the same time, many of these residents own cars and park them on the street, and there's a lot of concern about that. Donald Shoup had an op-ed in paper on the Oregonian on Saturday that laid out a parking permit system that could be implemented block by block. Could work on just the blocks where this is really necessary, and the residents are in favor of it, and would go a long way toward making this work. And getting to the heart of the matter, though, While additional cars at the curb are an inconvenience, and they're in front of my house too, I live three blocks off Hawthorne, it does seem like a very small price to pay for slowing global warming. I can't stress enough, that's really what this policy is about. It's about reducing auto travel to save the planet. And it's somewhat disconcerting to me that Portlanders, who are renowned for their environmental awareness, some of them don't seem to be making that connection. It's really simple. It's to slow global warming, you have to put up with some cars parked on the street in front of your house, or maybe you have to buy a permit. That's what it comes down to. On some other issues, especially this issue, Amanda Fritz has been working on this. Advocates for the disabled are worried about access for that group, and it seems reasonable to designate some spots on street and perhaps off street for those uses. But keeping in mind that the more spots that you require on the site, the more it raises the price of the building, the price of rents, and the lost opportunity to have more density right on the transit street. Thank you.
I think you're next.
All right. My name is John Urbanowski. I'm a member of the Kearns Neighbors for Rational Growth. On January 24th, the Land Use Board of Appeals will be hearing petitions from the Richmond and from the Kearns neighborhood regarding this issue. This circumstance represents a failure of either policy,
just
insight.
Just want to get you to pause for a second. I have a nervous-looking city attorney over there, so just need to not argue the substance of the Luba case here, but you can certainly refer to it.
Okay. That's all. That's the only discussion I'm having.
None of us are sophisticated when it comes to Luba.
Me neither.
I've been
that's
down that
I,
road.
That's why I rely on her.
Okay.
Sorry, keep going, and we haven't used your time for that.
So why is this happening? Why are these neighborhoods seeking redress elsewhere? And that's really what I want to talk to a little bit. And it seems to me I've been involved in this. I live one block from a 50-unit development going up at the 30th and Burnside. And it seems to me the city is being put in a defensive mode. And they're defending a policy despite a great amount of neighborhood resistance. They're kind of stuck in this mode of defensiveness. And it is this defensiveness that I sort of approached a small critique of the study that was recently done, because I think its weakness comes from trying to create a sales pitch rather than to create a conversation. So I praise the city for doing the study, but there are three problems with the study. One is the lack of objectivity. It seems like the language of the study, it's only a two-minute walk. Statements are made to kind of confirm the city's initial position on these policies and ideas. The consultant who did the study is highly dependent upon the city for many other consultant services. And it's hard not to try to please your customer. It's only natural. There's an overinterpretation of a small database, fairly small response to the survey. The study areas, which I have a slide that I'd like to bring up, is oversized. And the characterization of the literature is really exaggerated. And then the study has an indifference to the stakeholder input. There's very little input, actually none at all, from neighborhood households. What they call stakeholder input is basically developers. So the study claims that the unbundling of parking and rent lowers rental cost, and I think there's already been a discussion about that, and it's not necessarily so. And matter of fact, the study, if you were to look at it and see the rents in the various buildings, you'd see that the ones with out parking cost as much or more than the ones without. Density reduces personal motorized vehicle ownership. And if you look at the literature, cause or effect is undetermined. If I live in New York City, certainly I'm going to have a smaller degree of car ownership. I've got a great subway system. If I live in the suburbs, there's going to be more cars. Which is the cause, which is the effect? In this study, we really see that the car ownership is pretty close to the same, even though more dense. The methodology is a little bit skewed. If you can see that slide up there, you'll see that in this one, Irvington Gardens, this two-block radius turns into half a mile, almost a half a mile. It's 2,200 feet. So you're looking at a pretty fair 10-minute walk, maybe to get to your house. So it's literally underestimating the problems.
John, just want to ask you to wrap up soon. You've used your allocation of time, but complete your thought, please.
Okay. Anyway, I guess the other point is, why weren't the stakeholders, the neighboring property owners and families, asked about their reaction to these buildings? So in conclusion, this is what I'd like to see, is this conversation among all the parties involved in this.
Thank you very much. Chris?
Mayor, members of council, Chris Smith, a member of the Planning and Sustainability Commission. This is my first opportunity to testify in front of the new council. It's great to see old friends in new places. I want to provide some feedback from our hearing on this. The tenor of the testimony is a little bit different. The split in our hearing was about 50-50 between the folks eloquently arguing the neighborhood livability issues and then the other folks arguing our climate and energy and active transportation goals. So the split's a little different than it is here today. I have great empathy for the folks who are being impacted by this. The change has happened very suddenly, and it's interesting to reflect on that because, it's, as Mary Hales knows, when the current version of this policy was enacted in the late 90s, this was intended to be a signal to the market that you don't have to build one-to-one, right? But the lenders kept on insisting on one-to-one right up until the recession and then a little ways afterwards. And suddenly, the lenders have had a mind shift. You know, the economy has forced a mind shift on them, and we're seeing a big change very quickly. And that is obviously unsettling. And in fact, I think the policy that was intended as kind of a signal flare to the market is a blunt instrument, and we need to refine it. The Planning and Sustainability Commission has recognized that, as Joe said. You know, we gave direction to staff to come back and look at some issues. We didn't ignore it, as the Oregonian said. I mean, we did say it does not appear to us that the current situation meets the state law requirements for a moratorium. So, you know, we did not endorse a moratorium. We don't believe it's legal. But there is work to be done here. You know, I think some people have observed that this is a bit of a windfall for the developers, and I think there are a couple of developers who have figured out that if I build these units in neighborhoods that have relatively available on-street parking, I can externalize my parking costs. And, you know, we should not allow that. If there's that kind of windfall, we should have a value capture mechanism to recoup that for the benefit of the neighborhood, or we should exact other things from the developer in exchange for that ability. You know, Commissioner Fritz has mentioned to me the idea of requiring first floor retail so that we have actually the services and uses in the neighborhood that people can walk to as opposed to having to drive to and help reduce the impact. We could consider requiring a greater diversity of units so we get some of those three and four bedroom family sized apartments rather than just studios and one bedrooms as we're seeing. This is, now that the market has finally caught on, this is an opportunity for us to do a lot in policy, and we need to look at that, some of that in the comp plan, some of it perhaps more quickly. But I do want to reflect on what livability means. I mean, this is not just about parking. I mean, we heard about height and density and design guidelines that go hand in hand with this. Parking is certainly a part of it. But, you know, if the idea is that livability is free and abundant parking, and we're simply going to require people to build to provide that, that's not going to happen. We can't afford that as a society, and we wouldn't like what our city looked like if we did that. So I think we need to change to the idea that livability means parking is available. It may be made available by either regulation or pricing, but free and abundant is not going to happen. You know, I live in a neighborhood where the model is free and saturated, and that is not livable. So we need a different model. I think ultimately I'm sympathetic to the idea that local conditions need to be taken into account. You know, I believe that the right way to do that is through transportation management associations. That is the reason that I, after 10 years of walking away from the Northwest Parking Wars, I've put my name back in the hat for the TMA because I think we need to show how that can be done successfully. So while I do hope you will endorse our request to staff that we do look at these issues. I also would ask that you not be prescriptive about what we should do and let us work through the process of figuring out how to best fit the policies to match what we're seeing on the ground now. Thank you.
Just want to thank you and the other volunteers who put in all those countless hours on this commission and others. So thank you for that.
Thank you.
Thank you, folks.
And next will be Dina Marshall, Tamara DeRitter, Richard Lishner, Mike Schwarzenberger, and then we'll have one more speaker, and that's Jeff Dice after them.
Okay, I will. I did.
I did.
Welcome.
What? Okay. Hi, good afternoon. My name is Dina Marshall. I'm sitting in for my husband, Judah Gold Markell, who's a member of the Richmond Neighbors for Responsible Growth. And I'd just like to say, as a total disclosure, in the interest of total disclosure, I'm a consultant with Solid Ground Consulting. We do have a contract with BPS. I'm a facilitator for one of the PEGs. They're doing a great job on the comp plan, and I have done some work for the city in the past. I think first and foremost, RNRG is particularly appreciative of all of the work that all of you as individuals have done to respond as quickly as you have to the questions, the issues that this group and other groups in the city are bringing up around these issues. What I'd like to do is to very quickly run down some of what I've heard so far. Yes, just like Joe Zender said, this is about neighborhood leverage design and parking. Neighborhood leverage number one, and this is what I think is really getting some traction here. Some of the options I think that the mayor brought up are, one, you could either do nothing, you could wait for the comp plan process, or you could do something now. I think that RNRG would appreciate and encourage you to take door number three, do something now. And I think there are some ways that you could do that that would not be insignificant. Gary Davenport mentioned the LUBA appeal, that yes, that has been coming up, but I do want to highlight the point that the LUBA appeals that are right now on the table are about the zoning issue, not about the parking issue in particular. One interesting note, though, is that they all have to do with one particular developer. And we very much appreciate that you have been very responsive to trying to engage with this one particular developer. Neighbors in the neighborhood have been very disappointed with their inability or recalcitrance to engage. That's where I think the neighborhood leverage does come in. Kathy Lambert. I think Kathy is the face of exactly what Linda Nedokovin was talking about. Division Hardware, that's Kathy's store. That is the anchor for our Division neighborhood. That is what makes our neighborhood so special and so so independent. I can tell you, my own family, we live about a spitting distance from Division Hardware. We actually had to buy a wheelbarrow one day in order to bring home a rain barrel. So that's how close we are. We see them every day. They've been wonderful. If Division Hardware were to no longer be there, we would lose much of who we are as a neighborhood. the city as a convener, yes. I think that you as the city are perfectly situated and positioned to play this role, especially in relation to bringing in diverse interests and bringing people to the table. You've done that in the past. You can do that again. You're doing it very, very well, and we appreciate it. Jeff Sakamoto mentioned something about on-street parking permits. Yes, I think that is a good idea that came up in the Oregonian. Doug Klotz mentioned it, and it's certainly a possibility. That is something that can happen now. Richard Mello suggested the Citizen Design Review Committee. Yes, that is something that can happen and would be nice to see. I think that goes to our neighborhood leverage and also the design. Finally, the emphasis on the DEA report from contracted by BPS. Yeah, it's a good report. It's a good read. It's a good report, but I don't think it's all inclusive or entirely comprehensive, and very much encourage you to look beyond the four corners of that report to bring in more information. And finally, Chris Smith suggested having buildings dedicated to first floor retail. I'd also like to see second floor office spaces, especially in Inner Southeast. We don't have as much office spaces as we could use. We know that one big building is being dedicated to office and retail. We'd like to see more. And also to have multiple bedrooms. It would be great to have more families in the neighborhood. We don't want to see just dormitories. I'd hate to see, Delta, Delta, Delta on the first floor and TK on the third floor. That would be really difficult for us with families. So those are all of the comments that I have. Thanks very much.
Thank you. Thanks very much.
Hi, my name's Tamara DeRitter. I am the chairperson for the apartment parking task force, and that group was created out of the citywide land use group, who actually represent a number of people, including land use and transportation chair people and other interested citizens. As a response to this issue, we ended up being formed and asking the various groups that were fighting apartments with no parking what the issues were. And from that, we created a neighborhood parking study. With that, over a 12-day period, we received 1,188 respondents. And with and that material is now available to everyone, including the city staff, as a resource material so they can understand how folks gauged those issues, whether they agreed, disagreed, and how much. There's also three sections that have commentary. So there's a wealth of 200 pages of commentary from the community on this topic. So I am not going to go through that. That's for you to research. It's in this memo I've given to you. But what I'd like to do is just cap the top issues and then talk about the systemic issues. One is, the majority of the survey respondents clearly supported earlier and more inclusive public involvement, system development charges directed to promote alternative modes of travel, 24-hour transit service, commercial uses in the commercial zones, I think offices also, and architectural standards that minimize the architectural massing of these units where they abut lower density properties. The APTF applauds the Planning and Sustainability Commission direction to bring forward interim code revisions to address the most egregious problems being raised. But care needs to be taken that the short-term fixes do not always address the systemic issues that are apparent. One is equity, and I think we've talked about that with affordable housing to some extent, as well as mobility and access. But there's also services. How can people get to these services in a timely way for disabled and aging population? Many wish to age in place. Off-street and on-street parking coordination. The city is not taking the lead in that, and they need to. And that affects families and those that are health challenged who depend on vehicles, as well as those who are skilled laborers that need their vehicles to get to and from jobs. Transit, maintained service as well as increased 24-hour hours. Facilities for the promotion and single occupancy vehicle alternatives. So there needs to be not only larger storage space for hover around and cargo bikes, but also promotion of these and things like get around services and parking spaces on the street so shared parking can be promoted. And there needs active promotion by the city as well as owners and developers and owners. Right now, none of that is being done, and I wish the city would get in front of this issue instead of kind of having to react to it at this point. Yeah. Thank you.
Thank you. I think Commissioner Fish had a question for you.
Well, first, I should say to the former Parks Commissioner that Tamara is the first recipient of the Leslie Paul Cosbaugh Award for her work around community gardens.
You're here.
Thank you.
Congratulations.
Thank you.
We have your memo, and you raised two issues. I just want to give you a chance just to go over a little bit, just to clarify, if you could. The first is equity, and we've heard from other folks who said they have a preference for larger units that are family friendly. The concern I have as a housing commissioner is we can't get the market to produce affordable family friendly housing. It has to be heavily subsidized. So we know how to do it on the affordable side, but that's by using public investment, tax exemptions, you know, other tools. The issue we're looking at mostly is market rate housing, and yet people have said they want to see family-friendly units. I just wonder, how do you see that equity issue cutting when we're talking about market rate housing? I'd like nothing more than there to be family-friendly housing that's affordable.
Right.
But my fear is that if you mandate larger units, you're going to price, those will be priced accordingly, and you're not getting at the equity objective. Food for thought. I would welcome your comments. But the other thing you raised that I think is actually profound, and I maybe I should know the answer to this, but under your transit point, you challenge us to coordinate with, you know, TriMet and other agencies to make sure we have service. And we've heard from other people testify that in their neighborhoods, transit-oriented development is not actually linked to available transit.
Right.
And I hadn't actually thought about that before, but we go to great lengths to identify areas eligible for the TOD program, for example, the tax abatement program. We've identified major transit corridors, but I'm not aware that we've doubled back to make sure that there's actually available transit on the areas that we think are transit corridors. And so there may be a coordination issue there that you're raising, where we've identified it as a high traffic area, a high transit corridor area, but TriMet decides in its judgment with budget cuts that they're not going to run a bus through it anymore.
Actually, Fremont was cut, and one of the units, one of the 22 unit complexes, is not located on a frequent transit street. Yeah.
So I just want to say I appreciate that point, because I think we have to keep an eye on both sides of the ledger.
Yeah.
That is an issue. I think Fremont used to have weekend service. Now it doesn't at all.
That's right. And those that work at night, there's no shifts that, you know, actually run to the industrial parks either.
But the very premise of either the subsidy that we're approving or the abatement or whatever is that we're encouraging people to be places where they can take the MAX or at some point light rail or
and we assume that they can get
to there's that service.
Right.
Otherwise, it's somewhat self-defeating. So I appreciate that comment.
Thank you.
And I believe that that's one of the short-term fixes that the Bureau of Planning and Sustainability is proposing to look into to make sure that the language prevails so that when TriMet changes their service level, even if it's on the map as a frequent service route, that it can be done. The other thing I believe that the Bureau is going to be looking into in terms of family-friendly and other issues is the issue of incentives. So you could perhaps, if there were a minimum parking requirement, you might be able to buy back or buy down some of that requirement by offering to do 2- and 3-bedroom units, which is that's currently in the zoning code a menu of things for places where there is required parking. There are a number of different options that developers can choose that are in line with our goals as a sustainable community.
And if I may, Commissioner, when you say that you could, that when you refer to that, that incentive system, is there a mechanism to get family-friendly units that are affordable? Or are we just talking about family-friendly at the market?
Well, as you remember, Commissioner Fish, that was the premise that I initially raised this question when you and I worked on the big look and the tax abatements. This, for the most part, these are not affordable units. But to the extent that they are desirable units in desirable locations such as Division, Fremont, Selwood, and other places, at least there should be the option, in my opinion, for families to live in those apartments as well as single folks and couples, which then gets to opportunity for all and choices for all.
Well, and I would agree with that, except, again, we have to look at this as if the developer is not seeking tax abatement.
Correct.
Well, tax abatement would get us 20% of the units that could be affordable or accessible, but that's the trade-off. If it's purely driven by the market, we don't have the same incentive tool.
Just to answer your first question, Nick, one way that you can get inclusionary type housing that's affordable.
Oh.
I know. It's a bad word.
We're preempted.
You're not if you give people a break on parking.
Well,
and that's the way.
If it's
yes,
voluntary.
In the Hollywood District, the one right next to the Hollywood
theater. Yeah.
That one has units in it that are being allowed because they have reduced parking.
But as long as it's a voluntary program with a discretionary thing, but with someone can choose to participate
right.
rather than mandate it, you're right.
But if they're not forced to have parking, that you lose that chip.
Gotcha.
Okay.
Yeah.
Thank you for your thoughtful testimony.
Thank you.
You're good. Thanks. Richard.
My name is Richard Lishner. I live at 2545 Southeast 37th Avenue. Congratulations on your recent elections, your re-elections, and your continuing public service. Thank you for allowing me to speak today. Enough of the chit-chat. I am really angry. I am an architect and a photographer, and I have happily lived my version of the American dream with my wife and our son for the past 19 years in a 102-year-old bungalow halfway between Division and Clinton in Southeast Portland on 37th Avenue. I'm here to argue, shout, plead, and even beg you to do something about this development. The time for listening, studying, planning, and ignoring the parking issue is over. You must act to protect Portland neighborhoods. There are no more excuses. You can't keep walking into Rick's and loudly proclaiming that you're shocked that developers are taking advantage of our city and wishing to something could be done. Disabuse yourselves of the notion that there are two sides of this argument. Pluses and minuses, short-range hardships versus long-range goals, blah, blah, blah. This is not complex. I live half a block from a ticking time bomb, a new apartment building with 81 units and no parking. There is no one on this panel, no one in this room, no one in this city who would allow this to happen without demanding compromise, respect, justice, or at least sanity on this issue. Most observers rightly remark that this situation is so stupid as to defy belief that it's even possible, much less the probable result of your refusal to stop this in its tracks. What do you want us to do? The greedy, irresponsible, stupid, uncaring, unbeing polite developer from Beaverton has refused to even meet with the neighborhood. I testified before the Planning Commission, who tut-tutted and said they were powerless to act or even comment, and yeah, 81 units is probably a bit much, and maybe we should look at this in the future, blah, blah, blah. Oh, and isn't it nice about all those new restaurants, et cetera, et cetera. Two of the commissioners even had the nerve to make sure that none of these developments were planned near their homes in Northwest. Thank God. My neighbors know the development is coming, and it's here, the change is coming, and that we're going to have many new neighbors and apartments on the division. I believe in density. The compromise I'm seeking is right there in your planner's parking study. I could quibble with the study, their parking counts, which require New Yorker parking expertise, or their definition about parking utilization, which requires 85% capacity before we even discuss somewhere having a parking problem. Your own planning, 25% parking ratio, is the answer. No extra expense to the development, no extra rent. It's the answer. The answer is a moratorium on all parking construction in these corridors without achieving a minimum 25% parking ratio. Do not wait for the new Portland plan. You are planning while Portland burns. Most of these projects will be finished before the new plan is in place. Developers are laughing at us and at you. Whose side are you on? We can't stop them. Why not? You are our leaders. You have the lawyers. Just stop them. Put something in place. Delay, delay, delay until they are willing to talk with us. Come up with a new proposals. Oh, we're considering a smart park on Division. And any building with less than 25% parking ratio will be hit with so many thousands of space to develop it. Oh, we'll put in a Southeast parking plan that issues neighborhood parking stickers. No parking along the 2 hours without a sticker, two stickers per household at $50 a year, no stickers to any resident in a building with less than 25% parking ratio. That will get his attention. This developer is laughing at you. He is taking advantage of your refusal to play hardball to protect the livability of our neighborhood. Many of my friends wonder why I bother coming to these council sessions. I tell them that while it's very difficult to change your mind, that I've seen in the past that sometimes you are searching for public support to get some backbone to do what you know is right. This is your first test in the new year. You know that I'm right, that my compromise is reasonable, that our fight for equity is just. You know that my neighborhood is being raped. What are you going to do about it?
Thank you. Thank you.
My name is Mike Schwarzenberger, and I live in the Richmond area, about three blocks off Division, where those three apartment condos are going to go in. We converted our garage to a living space, and I'm required, going through it right now with the Zoning Commission, to provide a parking spot in that neighborhood, in my garage, which, unless I buy a smart car, is not going to fit in my garage it was built in 1941. So I don't know. So I have to go through the Zoning Commission to spend $1,800, non-refundable, no guarantee that I will not be allowed to have that parking spot in my garage, to switch it to my driveway, which will fit my truck, will fit my car, has no problem. But I have to spend another $1,800 to get that rezoned, my parking spot, because it's 9 feet, 17 feet, 10 inches. The requirement is 9 feet by 18 feet. So I've now spent $3,600, non-refundable, no guarantee, and I'm just wondering, does the developer have to put in any spots? We have 300 units going in within three blocks of my house. I live on the corner. I have 7 parking spots in front of my house. I can make it 8. If you want to do smart cars, I can put 12 of them in front of my house. The problem that I have is I have to pay all this money. I have to go down. We have 1 income for my 11-month-old child, and I don't see anybody doing studies for me, and I still have to spend the $3,600, and I'm just wondering when the developer has to deal with that. He doesn't live in my neighborhood. He doesn't deal with the cars there. We have bikes. We don't even ride. We don't even drive. So basically, my cars are parked on the street unless I go to the mountain or unless we do something way out of town with our dogs. We have a cargo bike for our 10-month-old. He's in front of our thing. We have a trailer for our bike. We ride everywhere in town, from all the way to Vancouver, all the way down. We'll ride to Salem. We've done 100 miles with him in a day. The difference is I don't see any of this developer or this development focusing on making our neighborhood more livable where I have to provide a parking spot. Why did they not have to provide a parking spot? My answer was that they're on a transit line. I mean, we all know they're not going to all take the bus. We can do a study and pay somebody thousands and thousands of dollars to do a study to figure out how many people are going to take the bus, or we could just ask them. And if you go through the places that have been built so far in the city, not every 100% of those people take the bus. They don't ride their bikes. I mean, I would like to think that they do, and I think maybe in the future they would, but what I don't understand is why does the Zoning Commission penalize me at $3,600? We have 1 income, and I'm trying to feed our kid off of it, and this developer, I guarantee you, could pay for an underground parking spot, an underground parking structure, at least by a building where there's shared parking for all these different structures that are going up. I feel like we got kind of thwarted through this whole thing, and it really wasn't bugging me until I had to go down to the Zoning Commission and sit there with different zoning people to tell me that I need to pay $1,800 for this, $1,800 for a pergola, $1,800 to, I mean, in the end of the day, I'm paying $7,200 to the city of Portland, and I have no guarantee.
Mayor, can I just follow up on that for a second? Last year, we renewed the waiver of SDCs for accessory dwelling units, and I take it what you're doing am I right that what you're building in your above your garage is an accessory dwelling unit?
No, we have subterranean. I mean, it's not subterranean, but it's in our basement, our garage, and we've turned it into a clinic. My wife's an acupuncturist, and we treat people out of there. And we have bike parking and all sorts of things.
So it's a business.
It is now, yes.
The reason I'm asking is because as you were describing that, I was thinking about an accessory dwelling unit with a parking issue that we haven't actually addressed so much the parking piece, but we waived all the fees, SDC fees, to encourage people to convert to accessory dwelling units without the regulatory burden. I think your situation is different if it's a commercial space, but I still think it's something we ought to look at because if we're waiving fees to encourage something, I want to make sure we're not making up the fees on a zoning issue that is related to what we're trying to encourage with the ADU. So Perhaps we could take a look at that and learn more about the facts if you're
Can I give you my name and number?
Please. If you could actually, you've got Joe Zender's the top of the food chain. So if you give it to him, he'll give us a response.
Big fish.
That does mean he's a predator, however. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
And then we have one more speaker, and that's Jeff Dice.
Hello, thank you very much for being here, and I'm Jeff Deese. I'm a resident of the Hawthorne area, 2600 Southeast Clay Street, just 1 block south of Hawthorne. Thank you for your efforts to relocate successfully the Montgomery House that's being affected by the development of a 77-unit apartment with 22 units of spaces of parking just 3 blocks away, another 50 units going in with no parking whatsoever. So thinking about the finding that what came out of the study, all the facts, to me the key one is the one that is truly meaningful is that 70% plus of the renters in these no parking apartments do own cars and instead they park out on the streets. That is the core fact that I think should drive our thinking about all this. So this is not really about reducing car ownership or about global warming. In fact, renters are the least likely people that I can think of who are going to make a decision about owning a car based on what Portland's apartment parking zoning requirements are. They're going to own a car or not own a car, regardless of what our zoning rules are relating to these inner apartments. And it's not so much about what's happening right now, though there are a number of these projects that are obviously way out of scale and are just going to have terrible immediate impacts on those locations that they're at. But we should be thinking about what's going to be happening over time. Our streetcar neighborhoods are going to be degraded by these congested streets. And initially, yes, the neighborhoods are robust. They can absorb some of these cars for a while, but this is not a sustainable approach to development, and that's what we in Portland are supposed to be all about. It's not about a communication process either. I mean, it would be nice if there was more communication. Everybody likes that. Meetings, processes are great, but ultimately, those meetings and processes are not going to trump the economic forces that are very logical that drive developers and to maximize their returns. And I don't believe that this is an issue about affordable housing. Eliminating a basic amenity like parking, yes, it will create cheaper housing, less attractive housing that it remains to be seen the market will accept over the long term, but it is ultimately going to deny the tenants a basic service that's part of a full bundle of housing for low-income tenants. And it's not about small apartments. I don't think anybody's concerned about 10 or 15 unit apartments that are going in without parking. That's the way the streetcar neighborhoods were developed in the 20s and 30s. And those are very attractive, exciting models for the density we have right now in these communities. The neighborhood can certainly handle that, and it'll fit in very nicely. It's not about NIMBYism. This is not about neighbors saying, we just don't want these things in our neighborhood. Streetcar neighbors tend to be there because they like the density, the energy, the excitement that's created by this density. We love these beautiful neighborhoods and all the activity that's there. It's not about good planning, good land use planning that we take pride in. We've heard already that from the author of this, these rules that this was never intended. This wasn't even part of our good planning. So it's an unforeseen consequence that we need to solve. It's not about free and abundant parking. Anybody that's been in these neighborhoods knows it's certainly not abundant, and it's quickly not becoming free. And it's not a crisis. It is a crisis in a few neighborhoods, just in their immediate areas, but it's not a crisis immediately, but this is going to become worse and worse as time goes on. A simple and quick solution is possible by requiring parking at certain ratios. I would really urge a short-term, something like, I know it's a nuclear option, maybe a moratorium, but it can be very quickly fixed. And if moratorium is off the table, why not take this issue on a fast track outside the slow comprehensive plan revision and get this fixed now before more and more of our neighborhoods start getting lost? Thank you for your time.
Thank you very much. I want to just thank everyone for excellent testimony. Appreciate the thoughtful views that have been brought here. We're going to take a 5-minute mercy break on the council and then return for some discussion about next steps. So bear with us and we'll resume. We'll recess for 5 minutes.
See, I've got Charlie. You've
got the program now.
When I'm president, I ask.
Hardly ever.
Yeah.
Oh, like that. Yeah, like that. Just give it some water. Yeah.
I love the guy about the left.
Oh, wasn't that fun?
I just love him. I personally thought he was right off because when you look at Chicago or New York, cool. LA, there's a lot more crime.
Right.
Right.
Yeah, great. Yeah, thank you.